Live from Studio 3, this is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Yes, we're spending the week in Studio 3,
It's very intimate.
As our studio, Studio 2, gets a makeover.
It's very cozy in here.
It is. It is very, that's why our discussion was so good this week, because we were so close, almost elbow to elbow. It's beautiful.
It's like being around the dinner table.
It is.
I'm also wearing a sweater today, so I feel very cozy.
You are. It's very cozy. And it's orange, nice fall colors.
Thank you.
Very, very lovely, Avi.
I compliment your outfit as well.
Thank you. So I'm wearing gray. It's kind of gloomy, but what can I say? And
We're already off the tracks.
And now we're getting back on.
Okay.
We're talking SEPTA today.
Okay.
And Avi, you know, for years I took SEPTA to work. Mm-hmm. I took the 47 bus from South Philly to Old City every single day. When I was in graduate school, I took the Broad Street line. Very convenient, very cheap, wonderful. That's why people tend to love public transit. But right now, SEPTA is in a financial free fall. It's, you know, what their leaders are calling a death spiral. We talked about it in the billboard. And, you know, the convenience and affordability that has helped people across the city and region get to their destinations now is under threat.
Mm-hmm.
SEPTA does not have a steady source of funding. You know, right now, it's a political battle in Harrisburg. Their hands are tied for so many reasons. And so this funding crisis at SEPTA has us thinking, what would happen to our region if SEPTA were to shrink, were to cut more services? How would it impact the city? How would it impact our region? And so, you know, here at Studio 2, when we have a lot of questions about any topic, what do?
Invite people in.
That are really smart and know a lot of stuff. And so that's what we did for today. And our question for you, our listeners, is should we, the public, the state, all of us, should we invest more into our public transit system? And we want you to really put your thinking caps on, people. We want you to kind of come up with a plan. How do we create a permanent funding system for SEPTA?
How do we fix this?
How do we fix this problem?
What should we do?
So we're not constantly here all the time. The number is 888-477-9499. And the email is studio2@whyy.org. There's also been some news today involving SEPTA.
Yes, it seems like a major strike has been averted. We will talk about that in the second segment of the show today with reporter Tom Fitzgerald from The Inquirer. So stay tuned for that.
Yes.
But again, if you want to chime in on the topic generally, 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
And I can't wait to hear from our listeners are super smart. So I feel like somebody's going to help us solve
this. They'll probably solve the whole thing.
I know.
So let's get into a trio of local news stories and let's tee this up, story number one, with a clip from the year 2000.
Ooh.
Experience Comcast Digital Cable. Over 200 channels of fantastic programming, 45 channels of CD quality music, and more Comcast in demand. More choices, more movies, digital picture and sound.
Comcast. I mean, if you wanted to tell the story of cable's ascendancy over the second half of the 20th century and into the 21st, all you have to do is look at Comcast.
Yeah.
Based here in Philadelphia, actually started life as a little cable company down in Mississippi, but grew here in Philadelphia into a behemoth. And it was all basically because of cable television.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it acquired many cable networks, including MSNBC, CNBC, the USA Network. And this morning we learned that Comcast is going to spin off most of its cable channel properties, including the three channels I just mentioned. Talk about a sign of the times and the fact that cord cutting is truly here. Comcast, the cable company, in many ways the Philadelphia company of the last 50 years, selling off most of its cable channels. Stunning news this morning from the world of media.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you mentioned it, Avi. I mean, this is a response to the decline in network television viewership and cable cord cutting. I have a little bit of a statistics for around cord cutting for you.
Sure.
By the end of this year, the number of cord cutting households is expected to reach 46.6 million.
Whoa.
And by 2027, that number will be about 68.7 million households.
Wow.
So we're talking about, and I cut the cord a couple years ago, haven't looked back.
Yeah, I still have the cord, but maybe I'll cut it eventually. No, it's stunning news. just shows the direction that we're headed in. And, you know, I remember when Comcast bought NBC and mm-hmm. all of the NBC channels, it was right around – sort of the process started around 2009, 2010 and was completed a couple years later. And that was like the triumph of cable. This yeah. little cable company from Philadelphia buys the mighty NBC. And now, you know, less than 15 years later – yeah. they're spinning off much of that. I mean, it really shows you how fast things change.
But once you cut the cord, and before we go on to the next story, I mean, all the channels that you used to have access to, like E, Oxygen, the Golf Channel, the stuff that you just maybe not watch all the time, but yeah. then you would just kind of tune in just because you had it. Once you cut the cord, you forget all about them.
Yeah. Goodbye, Golf Channel.
I know.
You were watching tons of Golf Channel before, apparently.
Not really. How's, more like E.
How's
Oxygen.
Your short game?
I used to play golf back in the
really?
Day. I did. I was a women's golf team.
Speaking of sports, yeah. that's very different than golf. Let's talk about boxing now.
Yes, one of my favorite sports. And a Philadelphia sports legend here, Smokin' Joe Frazier. Remember him? How could you forget?
The great.
Well, his former boxing gym at Broad and Glenwood could be demolished. Mm. And this is a little gym. He trained at this gym for years, eventually bought it, and he made it into this really safe space that he let people sleep there when they were going through tough times. He didn't charge people rent. He let guys work out there for free. He even helped people pay for diapers and baby supplies. I mean, he did so much and helped young boxers who were coming up in the game.
It was a beacon of the community
yeah.
in North Philadelphia, Joe Frazier's boxing gym.
But it wasn't a lucrative business,
right?
Unfortunately. So he lost the gym in 2011 because he owed over $120,000 in taxes. The building was sold to out-of-state investors in a sheriff's sale. Later that year, you know, Joe Frazier died. But these investors turned that building into a discount furniture store. And eventually that building was sold again to another company that has since failed numerous inspections. If you go up there and look at the building, it's boarded up. There's vines and graffiti.
It's in disrepair.
I mean, it's in serious disrepair. And, I mean, LNI has declared the building unsafe.
Yeah, so this story, and it's a great story, by the way, in the Inquirer from Alex Coffey and Ryan Briggs. You should absolutely read it. It's a tough read.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really tough read. But this building is historically protected.
It is.
But
it is.
Because it has been deemed unsafe and because it is in such disrepair, it still could be demolished. And what a loss that would be for the Philadelphia sports community. And it is unfortunately part of a pattern where the city, I posit, has not properly respected and honored the legacy of Joe Frazier and has instead, frankly, given a lot of that love to Rocky, who was not a real person. But
yes.
a lot of what Rocky is based on is the story of Joe Frazier. Mm-hmm. He came from a tiny town in South Carolina here as a teenager, and he is the Philadelphia dream. Forget the American dream. Joe Frazier is the Philadelphia dream, and I don't think the city has ever really properly honored that.
And the thing that he was such a good person and did all of these things for people in the community in that space, and to see it as it is now, it is just so sad. So maybe, I don't know, maybe something can change this.
Sure.
I don't know. But
well, read the story. Maybe you'll be inspired.
Out.
But, you
check
know, Joe Frazier, one of the greatest athletes to ever come out of the city of Philadelphia. For me, it's him and Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see the possibility that his gym could be knocked down.
And the name is still at the top if you go by.
Yep.
It's just
Third story. Before we
brighten
get out
our
of
day.
Here.
Brighten our day.
I'll brighten
Come
it
on.
A little bit. So there's been this weird trend recently of celebrity lookalike competitions, in-person celebrity lookalike competitions. There was one for Timothée Chalamet in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
There was one for Jeremy Allen White in Chicago. He's the star of The Bear. And there is going to be one here in Philadelphia for an actor who is from our area. It's coming up this weekend. The actor is, and I wonder if people can guess. I don't think they would, actually.
Mm-hmm. I did not guess.
You
I
did not guess.
I had no idea.
So it's a lookalike competition for Miles Teller, the actor who was the star of Top Gun Maverick, Whiplash, some other big movies.
Divergent, one of my favorite dystopian series. I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
There he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, the winner gets a cheesesteak from Angelo's. It's happening on Sunday.
Ooh,
I don't know.
Cheesesteak.
Cheesesteak. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. You win a free cheese from Angelo's. Has got good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really good.
Yeah.
And there's also going to be one for Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts in December. Are you going to attend that
one? I might attend that one. You threw that in there. He's like, let me put some sugar in the cup. There you go.
Yes. But it did get me thinking who really deserves one. I think a Will Smith deserves a lookalike competition.
Some big names,
here.
Yeah.
So if other Philadelphians, maybe send in your suggestions.
Throw some Studio ladies two. In there, maybe.
Yeah, why no women? That's weird.
I don't know.
That's so weird to me.
I'm just saying. Put it in there.
Well, put that aside for a second and tee up our big conversation today all about SEPTA. Mm-hmm. How did we end up here facing a death spiral for our systems, for our region's public transit agency? We're going to dive in on the other side of this break on Studio 2. Stick with us.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. There have been a lot of headlines recently about SEPTA, and basically they amount to this. The agency is in trouble. Ridership is still below pre-pandemic levels. Federal funding has dried up.
And there is a lot of uncertainty. Leslie Richards, SEPTA's CEO, recently announced she's stepping down. And in January, fares could go up 30%. And on top of all of that, service cuts are looming.
This is a fork in the road moment for SEPTA, or maybe a fork in the tracks. Either way, we all have to answer some big questions. What should the future of transit look like in our region? Should we pour more tax dollars into SEPTA, or should we scale it back? Give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org.
And I want to introduce our guests that we have in studio. First, we have Philadelphia Inquirer's transportation reporter, Thomas Fitzgerald. Tom, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you, Terry. Good to be here.
And we also have with us Megan Ryerson, professor and chair of the Department of City and Regional Planning at the Weitzman School of Design at the University of Pennsylvania. Megan, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much.
So before we dive into the big picture conversation, Tom, some news breaking this morning. It looked like there could be a big transit workers strike that would potentially shut down huge swaths of the system, but maybe it's been averted. What's the latest?
SEPTA and the Transport Workers Union, their largest one that represents operators and everybody that makes things run, they have a tentative agreement with SEPTA that was pretty much a handshake last night and is finished up this morning. Mm-hmm. So
still has to be approved by the members?
Yes. The union's executive board signed off, you know, after their negotiating team briefed them on it. And, now SEPTA's going to have to find a way to pay for it.
Right. That's the big conversation this hour.
But there won't be a strike that would, you know, basically paralyze the area, the region. So that's good. And there was even, like, talk of a so-called mega strike, which,
right,
you know, the city worker union, yeah, DC-33, plus the transit folks.
Which, talk about paralyzing, that really would have shut everything down. So it looks like that's off the table for now.
It does, yeah, because TWU is going. They settled. They got a good deal, what they consider the best deal they could, mm-hmm, get.
And so let's zoom out a bit, because we've been talking about this funding cliff with SEPTA. You know, a lot of the COVID relief money is now gone, and SEPTA does not yet have a permanent funding source from the state. And so, Tom, my follow-up question to you is, you know, how exactly did we get into this position? And if you could give us a little bit of a SEPTA history lesson on how we just got here, where a major transit agency doesn't have a consistent source of funding from the state.
It's the whole thing is so patchwork. And they've been having to scrounge for money since their inception. There's never been, like, a real big support from the state. And also, they depend a lot. They depend to an unusually high degree on people riding and paying fares, more so than any of the other big agencies.
So it's like less 38%, subsidized.
Yeah.
It's less subsidized. And it's been that way since the beginning. And then the state, over the years, SEPTA opened up shop in 1964. And over the years, the state has, like, you know, designated fees and taxes to support public transportation all around the state. by formula, so SEPTA gets the most, and then Pittsburgh. But they just made up these things, and then
the funding would dry up. Yeah,
yeah, it would dry up. They would need to search for another thing, or needed more.
One Band-Aid here, one
Band-Aid there. And yeah. Once there was like I guess it was in the 90s, SEPTA was supported in large part by a tax on the real estate owned by electric utilities. Well, then that industry was deregulated and no more income.
Yeah.
That's just one example.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the pandemic, and then ridership is down and SEPTA is in this quandary.
Right. And the federal government spent $67 billion for transit agencies everywhere to keep them alive so they wouldn't just wither up and, you know, not be able to be resurrected after recovery. So SEPTA got some of that money, and they've run through every penny of it now. And that's why they're in an instant crisis, but it feels like they're always in a crisis for 60 years,
yeah.
You know, and this kind of crisis right now is happening Boston, New York, et cetera. Now, in New York City, for instance, the legislature at Albany gave MTA a pile of money.
And that's not happening here.
Here.
Because
no.
There's loggerheads in Harrisburg. Right. It seems like Megan Ryerson, you wanted to chime in on that.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in and mention Boston, you know, as sort of a peer city and a peer transit agency. They receive more than double from the state than SEPTA does. So on the capital side, SEPTA receives, you know, from the state much less than our peer institutions, our peer transit institutions receive from their state. And because of that, the capital budget, it's allocated to maintenance. We can sort of never get ahead. And you mentioned federal funding drying up. There are pots of federal money that transit agencies can apply for. They can sort of leverage additional capital dollars and match those or someone and turn them into more dollars from federal grants. We can never get there. Because
we don't have the money to match.
We don't have the money to match. We get from the state on the capital side, we're putting all into state of good repair and just trying to maintain. And we can never
and
get
that
ahead.
No go doesn't go to operation, which you pay people, and that's why there's constant this rotation of strike threats. I think SEPTA's had more strikes, 11 over its history, than
at
other transit agencies.
Since 75, yeah. There probably were some before that are lost to the archives, but like the
so many strikes we can't keep track. Yeah.
Exactly. And a factor is that the federal government, with its pots of money, it's geared toward capital and very little of it toward operating. So SEPTA and other agencies, like Megan talked about Boston and I mentioned New York, rely on the state for a lot of operating subsidy.
Yeah.
Where they are, the state where they are.
Let me bring in this comment from Linda, who says public transportation should be sustained by the government, not the fare box. What's your prescription for SEPTA? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And let's bring in a caller now. This is Bernie from Kensington. I think I know Bernie in Kensington, one of our regulars.
Hey, Bernie.
Who wants to comment on pandemic funding. Bernie, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Hey, thanks for your call. I remember, I think it was in 98, that the, like 40-day strike, which was a disaster. I mean, I had to walk an hour. A lot of people were inconvenienced. And it's going to happen again because SEPTA just does not operate sustainably within its means. I was talking with a worker yesterday on the Market Frankfurt line. And he told me one of the reasons for discontent with the workers is that recently a lot of top executives all got $75,000 bonuses. So that causes work tent, and it's not a good indication of spending. And Harrisburg keeps saying, you got to find out ways to operate sustainably. And it's not. The outgoing director ran this thing into the ground with almost $250 million in debt, kept hoping that this pandemic money was going to keep coming from heaven, and they spent it like drunken sailors and giving themselves big bonuses. And
all right. Well, let me
operate sustainably.
Bernie, thanks so much. That's Bernie in Kensington.
Thank you. Yeah.
You heard Bernie. Operate sustainably. So I guess there is an argument, and you do hear this a lot from Republicans in Harrisburg, Megan Ryerson, that SEPTA just needs to sort of face reality and scale back what it does. I mean, let's contend with that.
Scaling back what it does would take away the absolute lifeblood of the city. Let's talk about the 55,000 students who rely on SEPTA to be their city school bus. This is a critical service. When we talk about scaling back transit, we're talking about taking away school transportation for students. You take the bus at 3 o'clock or 7 a.m. in the morning. You are riding with the city students. That is access to opportunity. It's access to the magnet schools. We have an incredible array of magnet schools with different specialties across Philadelphia, right? So special that you don't have to go to the neighborhood school. If you're interested in agriculture or STEM or so on, you can access all of these schools. That is because of SEPTA. And right, the school district has a relationship with SEPTA, and they invest in these passes. And I think that that's absolutely critical. Think about the bus 49 that connects Strawberry Mansion, Brewerytown, and so on with Penn and CHOP. That is access to healthcare. That bus met its ridership
and jobs.
That bus met its ridership projection so quickly, just showing how when you provide that access to opportunity, people take it. I think that on the comment of operating sustainably, I think it's really important to think about the landscape. The competition for workforce because of companies like Amazon, right? Operating and hiring operators and so on, these are real challenges in the economic environment that SEPTA is operating in.
So you're saying that the people who drive SEPTA buses and trains now have other opportunities?
They have other opportunities. And so I think that when we think about how SEPTA's operating, they're operating in the broader economy that is constantly changing.
Mm. Yeah, and I want to read this comment. Somebody DM'd me today, and he said, I use SEPTA daily. It's extremely dirty and dangerous. It's filthy. Most recently, there has been an uptick of people bringing their animals on just because they can, not because they need them. But they say still, yes, invest more in SEPTA. Why? Because even with all those things as a safety concern, those of us who use it and use it the proper way deserve to have this valuable transportation resource. I believe this city could die without SEPTA. And that was the comment that was made. And so why is it that SEPTA and how does SEPTA even compare to other cities in trying to fix this, dealing with the fact that on one hand, there's safety concerns. People have talked about all kinds of miscreants and other issues happening on the trains. But at the same time, you need the ridership to improve.
Definitely. There's a lot of research to show that when people are thronging to it, when it's busy, crime and misbehavior goes down quite a bit. And the thing that the person mentioned to you on DM, it also feeds into a problem with SEPTA having a big enough workforce to operate enough buses that they are frequent enough and reliable. And don't, like when you're standing at the bus stop and a bus is so crowded it blows by you. Mm. People love that.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they're just, folks aren't becoming operators and they are many are very scared. And there have been a jump in assaults since 2020. People, I guess society feels off the chain, and that's not like a new thought. and so it really makes it not so nice to work sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Let me read this email from Tim, who says, many central Pennsylvania legislators vote against funding SEPTA because they don't like the people on it. What is the situation in Harrisburg, Tom Fitzgerald? Because it does seem like we're going to keep circling back to that if we're going to try to talk about what the solution is moving forward. What is the landscape? What is the current argument? And what is the broader argument in Harrisburg?
part of it's structural, and many states have this dynamic where a large urban area, which is kind of usually the economic engine for the state, Chicago, Boston, us, has confronts a legislature that's dominated by urban interests, just the way the districts are
dominated
divided.
By rural interests?
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Rural interests.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the urban people are outvoted by far because of the way the legislature's been for 200 years in Pennsylvania, for example, and the way it's apportioned. And so that's starting with that. And then I guess there is a difference of philosophy in government, partisan difference in Republicans wanting, smaller, more efficient, sustainable, not being so expansive and, watching the pennies. And Democrats are stereotyped. They're both stereotypes as, spendthrift.
Tax and spend, right.
Tax and spend. So that's in there, too. And then also it's sort of if you're a senator – I'll just pick, and no offense to anyone, Cambria County.
Sure. Southwestern Pennsylvania.
Southwestern Pennsylvania. What incentive do you have in your job to go out in front to help SEPTA? Even though Johnstown has transit and they get a share too.
Well, I guess the argument is that SEPTA's viability attracts people to the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
They then pay taxes, and disproportionately those taxes are spent in places like Cambria County.
That's right. It's just
But they don't see it that way.
No. And it's just as in the federal government, look at where military bases are concentrated in rural and a lot of them, not in rural and poorer states. And so the transfer of Acela Corridor, Eastern Seaboard people, our taxes go to places like Alabama. And the deal is supposed to be we're one country, so we help each other. But sometimes the people that are getting help don't remember and return it.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I want to invite you to participate in the conversation. The question for today is, should we, the public, the state, all of us, should we invest more into our public transit systems? And please put your thinking caps on. How would you fix this problem? How would you create a permanent funding source for SEPTA? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. Want to bring in a caller, Rachel from Haverford, who wants to talk about some of these political issues. Rachel, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you so much. I'm enjoying this conversation very much.
Thanks, Rachel.
My question, comment is kind of a follow-up to what you were just both talking about, kind of a political angle. I'm wondering if there's a conscious or subconscious effort on the side of kind of more fiscally conservative, right-leaning politicians or board leaders or whoever's in power to kind of avoid funding SEPTA and other transportation because it would make it the city more a better place to live, easier to travel in. It would make it really exciting for people to move to the city. They go, oh, look at all this amazing stuff that's going on. And it would take people away from red counties. And it would make people understand more cultural awareness, and so they might actually tend to be more democratic by the time they leave the city. So is there kind of a, I don't want to say.
A culture political war at play here. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting question. That was Rachel from Haverford. Megan, I see you nodding along. Do you have a thought on that?
I mean, I think that it's an interesting thought. I do want to talk about sort of red and blue counties. Something we actually saw in the election most recently was that red and blue counties alike voted for increased transit funding in states where counties can raise their own money for transit. They're called local option transportation sales taxes.
And to be clear, we cannot do
that.
We do not have that option. We need Harrisburg to approve our ability to do that, and that would provide a new source of funding. But
that's so important. I just want to just make sure we clarify that, because when people say, well, stop turning to the state, Philadelphia, Montgomery County, Delaware County, they should step up because it is our system.
Well, they can't.
They can't, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As much as they
as much as they might want to, yes.
Exactly. So I think that we're seeing across the U.S. in states where we can vote on these local option transportation sales taxes, we're seeing red counties vote for them, we're seeing blue counties vote for them. And so I think that without that option, I think Pennsylvania is more and more divided, because we have to make these decisions at the state level, and individual counties can't provide their own revenue source.
That could be a huge fix, potentially, if it ever happened.
It could be. And other states, I just, did a lot of reading for some stories about what Massachusetts does and the towns and counties. I guess the towns are kind of like the big dogs and the counties are less. They can, put different fees on a millage on the property tax, whatever they want to support transit. And the MBTA, the Boston Transit Authority, kind of hinges service on what the towns kick in.
We actually have some folks writing in with suggestions on how to help.
I like this.
This is a great one from John. John says, large Philly-based companies should subsidize their employees who use SEPTA to get to work. John says they did that for Bart in California when he lived there. Bart's the system, I believe, in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Marilyn says, I live out here in Bucks County. I've been using regional rail from Doylestown forever. Here are some ideas. Raise the cost of tickets just a little. That would bring in money. 2, think of creative ways to raise money, like bake sales on steroids, concerts, and things like that. Have a city and region-wide intensive fundraising drive. And 4, create a slogan, put it out there, something like Save Our SEPTA. I mean, let's talk about political mobilization here, Megan Ryerson. Mm-hmm. Is that a potential solution here, sort of grassroots mobilization to raise awareness, just to get people charged up about all that? Do you think that could be part of the solution?
Definitely. And as a public school parent, I love the bake sale. All about the fundraisers.
Cupcakes for everybody.
Exactly. I think absolutely. I think that good decisions are contagious. I always think that taking transit, biking, walking, and so on, right? The more that we talk about these things, the more that we normalize these things, the more that we build community about these things, you see more and more people flocking to them. And so, yes, I love that idea.
And one thing that interests me politically is that, most legislators aren't completely stupid despite what people say. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some of them are very, very good people, but on both sides. But there's also, there's money talks, and 42% of state revenues come from Southeast Pennsylvania. If I wanted to add what Megan said earlier about the area, if transit died, Philly would really decline, or hopefully not die, but it would shrivel. It would be really bad. And they understand that in Harrisburg. It's a fact. And SEPTA's lobbyists keep reminding everybody, but it doesn't really move the needle. Mm. It's sort of like, basic legislative politics, like, what's in it for me?
Horse trading.
I'll give you this money, and then you give me some for my bridges.
Yeah, I want to read a comment. Matt comments, Republicans are horrible. They don't use public transportation, so screw it, but they subsidize driving with all sorts of funding for roads, bridges, and highways. Ron says, most folks who use public transit are middle or low-income people. Every time greedy union people cry poor mouth, people living from paycheck to paycheck are forced to dig deeper into their almost empty pockets. So a lot of folks are blaming different individuals. And so we're going to take a break in about a minute or so. But I mean, I really want to sort of talk about other ways, other political ways of moving the needle. One thing people are saying is maybe we should work on tying SEPTA funding and mass transit funding to infrastructure funding, bridges. Although we can talk about the politics of that and some of the efforts to get that going, whether or not it's worked. But maybe, there's some arguments to be made there. Tie it to something that these rural counties really want so that SEPTA can get what it needs. But we're all trying to put our thinking caps here today.
Yeah, and I also
put our thinking caps on.
And I also want to talk about in the closing segment coming up, like the future of public transit in a post-pandemic world, right?
Yes.
Because this used to be a commuter service for a lot of people who don't really need that service anymore. So you need more money, but I imagine you also need to just reimagine what public transit does. So we're going to talk about all of that coming up on Studio 2. Lots of calls and emails. Keep them coming. Studio2@whyy.org. The number is 888-477-9499. Welcome back, friends, riders, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about public transit today. And the big question is whether or not it is worthy of funding. Do you think we should invest more in public transit? Is SEPTA a waste of taxpayer money, or does it help you? How can we fix this? Put on your thinking caps. Our number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
Our guests this hour are Thomas Fitzgerald, transportation reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Megan Ryerson, professor and chair of the Department of City and Regional Planning at the Weitzman School of Design at the University of Pennsylvania.
I want to bring in another caller. We have Phil from Brewery Town who has something to say. Phil, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I just wanted to talk about the just greater idea of car-centric design that we have in Philadelphia and in our cities across the country, and how public transit never really gets that light of day without tackling that first. My job is I work for a nonprofit teaching bike education in schools, and how we can just get more focus on public transportation by having more of a cultural shift towards non-car-centric modes of transportation.
Mm. Thank you so much, Phil. That's Phil from Brewery Town. And I think Phil sort of opens the door to the question that I had before the break, which was, how do we sort of get counties in Pennsylvania, red counties specifically, that may not be interested in what Pittsburgh or Philadelphia has going on with their public transit? What are some of the ways that we can politically sort of tie this funding to something else so we can get it passed and get those open those coffers back up, Tom?
Right. Yes. In Harrisburg in 2007, and then it was revised in 2013, such a deal did happen. It was really hard to do. The first bit was Governor Rendell proposed putting more tolls all along I-80 and then giving it to the turnpike, and then using turnpike revenues to fund transit systems. And then in 2013, they changed it. Some of it went to roads and highways. In 2013, under the Republican governor, Tom Corbett, it was changed to give all that money, $400 million a year, to SEPTA. Now, it's been sunsetted because the downside is the Turnpike had to take on a ton of debt to meet the obligations, and it'll keep increasing tolls until 2035. But it worked.
It can
the
be
scheme
done.
Worked for about
It can be done.
14, yeah. 15 yeah. years.
So there was this period where SEPTA did have the type of funding that they need, and now they need a new source.
Right. And then they got the more rural folks got.
I hate that word too.
I know.
I don't hate rural Pennsylvania. Rural.
Me neither. Rural areas are great. Yeah. But like they got more money for, you know, their messed up roads and bridges.
Yeah.
And the state increased the gas tax for the first time in a gazillion years. It was considered a miracle.
Political compromise is possible. Let's bring in another caller now. This is Miles in South Philadelphia. Miles, you're on Studio 2, Line 2. What is your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for having me. Longtime listener, first time caller.
Wow, welcome.
I'm calling because, you know, I live in South Philly, and we take the train out of the Snyder stop. And, you know, I love taking the train, but there's often people using drugs and kind of sketchy stuff happening. And it makes me uncomfortable, especially with my kid. And something I like about New York City is they have lots of police in the subway stations and maybe even on the buses. And that does sort of, at least for me, give me a sense of security. And I wonder why SEPTA can't have more police around, especially in some of these kind of sketchier stations. I think that would help get more people riding.
I like that. I like that observation, Miles, from South Philadelphia. So I think that points to the larger question of, with limited money, you're trying to keep people on the system. Mm-hmm. Keep people in the boat until we can figure out the big picture. And I think there's a big question of how to do that. Is it investing in safety and security? Is it investing in cleanliness? Like, what are the things that SEPTA could do now with the money it has to at least stop the bleeding? And I'll give that to you, Megan Ryerson.
I keep coming back to frequency. If more frequent service, more people riding, it leads to a safer system. I mean, we have this concept in planning, this sort of eyes on the street, you know, this idea that we all come together in the street, we keep each other accountable and so on, and frequency does that. Mm. You can just think about the extreme, a station where one train comes through a day compared to a station where trains are coming through every 7 minutes, yeah, right? That's a completely different environment.
So to get to frequency, does that mean shutting other lines down? Like, what's the trade-off for frequency?
I mean, we need investment for frequency. I mean, we see this extreme latent demand for transit in Philadelphia and nationwide. Mm-hmm. When regional rail service increased a little bit, they saw a 30% jump in ridership. People want to take the train. Mm. We've seen this in intercity context too, right? When Amtrak makes some change, people, it's full. People want to take the train when it is a convenient option.
Mm. Yeah, people love that. And you can participate in our conversation. What's your idea to fix this funding problem? 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whry.org. You have several callers on the line. So
someone has a brilliant idea.
Yeah, Richard from Center City. I want to hear this. Richard apparently has this brilliant idea to fix the system.
No
so,
pressure, Richard.
Richard, we want to hear it. What's your idea? You're on Studio 2.
Well, you're brilliant might be a little too far. But
Richard!
That is so tragic. Well, we'll never know how to fix SEPTA now.
Yeah, really,
that's
man.
That was a build-up.
That could be Nobel Prize stuff.
That was, you know, that's the story of SEPTA. You think you're right there.
Yeah.
Okay, let me pivot. Let me pivot because I really did want to read this email from Martin. I've been wanting to read this for a while. So Martin says, ridership may never get back to pre-pandemic levels due to remote and hybrid work. As much as the service cuts will hurt riders, service levels, they have to be in sync with post-pandemic ridership levels. I think SEPTA is going to have to look at their staffing. Mm-hmm. They might have to look at layoffs. Be careful about not raising fares too high because that will risk losing riders. So, Megan Ryerson, let's talk about how a system like SEPTA and really all transit systems should evolve for a post-pandemic world where there are fewer of these daily 9-to-5 commuters. Like let's imagine this world. What should it look like?
Absolutely. I think SEPTA and its peer agencies have been thinking about reimagining the network more for lifestyle than the daily commute, right? We're taking SEPTA to go to our activities. We're taking SEPTA for healthcare and so on, right?
Might even go shopping during the middle of the day, you know?
Exactly. And so there's absolutely a movement to that. You know, there's been a movement to reimagine the bus network and that's a piece of it. What does this new environment, this post-pandemic environment need?
Interesting. And by the way, we wanted to hear that brilliant idea. Well, Richard is back.
Oh, is he really?
Richard from Center City is back.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad you called back, Richard. Richard, you're on Studio 2. We want to hear this idea. We've been chomping at the bit.
You may have oversold me, but here we go. So I ride the Broad Street Line predominantly to go to sporting events.
Okay.
And what I've noticed is that, you know, the PA systems are difficult to hear. And when I compare this to, say, the tube in London, when you ride the tube, there are LED readouts that tell you when to expect the next train, when to expect an express. And I think you have an opportunity with people that are spending hundreds of dollars for sporting tickets to be willing to pay. And they use this transportation system maybe a couple times a month during football season, but if you make it more easy to use, I think people are going to continue to use it for other commuting events.
Wow.
Yeah, and that could be countdown clocks too that tell you when the train's going to come.
Yeah,
if they're accurate.
Yeah, if they're accurate.
And that's why Peggy says Peggy emails, what if the price of a Sixers ticket is in the new downtown arena? And that was kind of one of the proposals, and that it included a SEPTA ticket. Whether or not the fan planned to take the SEPTA or not, it's just part of the price. And they also supported park and ride stations in the suburbs, getting more people to even come on to SEPTA. And then, like Richard said, kind of making it such a great experience that people want to be a part of SEPTA or take SEPTA more often. And so let's talk about the future. I mean, this situation is what it is. You know, possibly 30% fare hikes coming up in January. In July, there's going to be service cuts. This is what's happening unless something changes drastically in Harrisburg. Any predictions on what that is going to do to ridership, to the type of economic impact that it will have on businesses in our region?
There's a phenomenon called the death spiral, because that would be coupled with coming about 6 months later, there would be 20% across the board cuts in service. And as Megan has discussed, frequency is everything and the reliability of the service to build up ridership. And if you're waiting an hour or two between regional rail trains, you're going to lose more riders, and then there's
paying more and getting less.
And then there's this vicious cycle of fare hikes and cuts, fare hikes and cuts, and it takes forever to get out of it if you can.
Definitely. And then we see all these long-term effects. We see people skipping medical appointments because that access is just another barrier for them. Again, back to the school children. We see people making school choice based on their ability to get to school rather than what's the best educational opportunity for me, right? So we certainly have the effects in 6 months.
And how does that affect Philly as a whole, the region as a whole?
And the economics here. Yeah.
Well, I think it affects our attractiveness in terms of people wanting to come here, invest here, the livability, right? I think that people, back to school children, people looking at the landscape, should I live here? Should I live elsewhere? That's a huge factor. I think we've all talked to people who are thinking about relocating to Philadelphia, and they say, tell me about transportation. Tell me about getting around. How do you commute? How do your kids get to school? And so on and so on. These are real variables that people are making their life choices on. We need to be attractive on these variables.
And if the options have withered, that's going to affect decisions where to move, whether to come here, and some
where to
of the
build new housing.
Where to build housing, developments. It just affects everything.
And we haven't
it
even,
becomes, you know, like.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned the climate side of this.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
this is a climate solution, getting people out of their cars.
Onto transit.
And getting onto transit.
So if you never ride SEPTA, and some people think, well, you know, I don't ride it, so what do I care? Well, you care if you can drive somewhere in the suburbs, because no SEPTA, there would be millions of more vehicle
cars
miles
on the road. That traffic's going to be worse.
Absolutely. And SEPTA is part of a network, and not just a network of transit, right? A network of all kinds of transportation. And we there are people who need to take other modes because of their abilities or so on. Right. We want that to be available to them, right? We need people who might need to drive to have to drive. We want people who can take transit to be able to take transit and so on. We need the entire network to function.
Absolutely. Yeah. It you pull it apart and then things don't work. And, you know, and then the climate factor too, climate change. Everybody benefits from less, vehicle pollution.
Yeah.
But it all starts with clearer PA announcements. I think we could all agree on that.
I know.
I would actually really
You're
like
riding
that.
SEPTA. Yeah, yes.
Some kind you of, could be the voice.
Hey, look, I threw in an accent that is not Philly just now. So.
All right. Well, that is the end of our show today. And it was a fascinating conversation, a sprawling conversation, much like the network that we call SEPTA. Mm-hmm. Let me thank our guest, Megan Ryerson, professor and chair of the Department of City and Regional Planning at the Weitzman School of Design at the University of Pennsylvania. Megan, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And thank you, Thomas Fitzgerald, transportation reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. You have been very busy recently, so we do appreciate an hour of your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here and pitch in. It's fascinating topic that I could go on and on about.
Yeah, and thank you to all our callers. Thank you for all those ideas you sent in and emailed. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Besser, and Andreas Copes. Diana Martinez engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 3 for Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. Choo-choo. Thanks for joining us.